We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Cash Considerations Podcast, a Chicago Bulls podcast. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm with Jason Patton. Jason, we have some exciting podcast news to announce today.
Yes, we do. We would love to announce that we are joining the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Shout out to Kevin Jones bringing us on, giving us this big opportunity. There's a bunch of other fun pods part of this growing network, and there will be more to come. Hopefully, there's good Warriors pods, Cavs pods with some really good dudes. So this should be a lot of fun. Really excited about this opportunity.
Yeah, Jason and I are just going to keep doing the same thing we've been doing through the first, 11 or 12 episodes of this podcast. But hopefully this will help us, reach more people and maybe have a little cleaner sound. All the same good stuff you have come to expect from the Cash Considerations podcast, which is mostly me swearing and like crying on air. That's still going to happen. But now this time we're going to have like a little bit of juice behind us, a little bit of support. It's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, should be a lot of fun. So I guess this is also our first pod after the Christmas holidays. We've been off a little bit because of that. And the Bulls have played, I believe, four games since we podded last after that Thunder debacle and the fight and all the road dog and all that stuff. They are 2-2. They did actually go on their first winning streak. The first game after the Thunder game, they lost an ugly one against the Nets. It was a home game. It was a game they probably should have won. I think the Nets, although the Nets have been much better lately, it was low scoring. The Nets were on the second of a back-to-back. They had just beaten the Lakers. But Spencer Dinwiddie, former Bull, who the Bulls, I believe, cut twice or some crap like that. I believe they, to make room for Michael Carter-Williams. Spencer Dinwiddie was the hero in that one. Huge game. As much as the Bulls should have won, it was also kind of nice to see Spencer Dinwiddie stick it to them. I feel like he's done that multiple times already in his career. And then after that, the Bulls, like I said, two-game winning streak, their first winning streak of the year. Games that they really were expected to win, and they did take care of business. They beat the Magic in another ugly game. That's been kind of a theme of the Bulls. They've been, especially under Jim Boylan, really uglying it up. Dirty game, 90-80. I guess the only really good thing about that game was that Lauri Markkanen went absolutely insane after a really slow start. I believe he started something like 1 of 7 from the field. He ended up with 32 points on like 12 of 20 shooting, so he finished really hot. And that carried over to the next game when the Bulls just beat the Cavs' ass, and the Cavs are just absolutely terrible. Like, the Bulls are bad, the Cavs are even worse. That was a 112-92 victory. Markkanen again went off his first 30-back-to-back 30-point games of his career. He had 31 in that game, just shooting from all over the floor, pick and roll, hitting tough mid-range shots. He shot 11 of 18 in that game. The Bulls just kind of took over that game in the second half, dominated 58-33 in the second half after the Cavs played pretty well in the first half and then just kind of fell apart. But then I think the game that most people were excited about over this last week was the Bulls' past game against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Very emotional, big reunion, Derrick Rose back, Tibbs back, Luol Deng back, Taj Gibson back, and the Bulls' winning streak came to an end. The Timberwolves, Derrick Rose beat the hell out of the Bulls, 119-94. D-Rose had a huge game. He really took it to Chris Dunn, just kind of took it to everybody. He got MVP chance, all that fun stuff. What was going through your mind watching Derrick Rose just kind of live it up like it was 2011 again?
Yeah, I think that, Rose is probably going to win Sixth Man of the Year this year, which is pretty amazing. I don't really think he deserves it. I think Montrezl Harrell should probably be the Sixth Man of the Year, but we know that award typically goes to someone who has the most points per game. Rose averaging nearly 19 points per game now. His numbers across the board are really remarkable. He's got a 20 PER, 19.8 PER. He's averaging 18.7 points a game, 4.7 assists, 2.8 rebounds. He's shooting 49% from the field and 45.5% from three-point range on 3.3 attempts per game. So basically, the big improvement for Rose is the three-point shooting. We've seen that throughout the start to this season. He's just been on fire from three, particularly in November. In November, he hit 56% of his threes, which is just wild. He came back down to earth a little bit this month in December, only 37%. He was only 1 of 5 for three against the Bulls, but instead what you saw, you know, it's such a cliche to say vintage D-Rose, but he did have so many moves in that Bulls game that reminded you of the player who won MVP in 2011. Just that first little shake and bake move he had in the first quarter where he threw up the floater as he was like drifting behind the backboard. That was straight nasty. I mean, Rose has really revitalized his career and it's pretty remarkable. I get nervous even talking about D-Rose because of everything that's happened with him off the court. I think that those who have followed my work for a while and not just recently, remember how much I used to love Derrick Rose. And, you know, certainly it's just become complicated, I guess, by everything that's happened since then. So, but Rose is playing well. And, you know, the Wolves, I don't think, are going to make the playoffs. The West is just super competitive. The Suns are the only team in the West that isn't really gunning for the playoffs this season. But, you know, D-Rose is going to be in the thick of things throughout this season. Like, this storyline isn't going away, I would say. D-Rose revival is here to stay.
Yeah, you mentioned the complicated part, for sure. Obviously, there was the whole sexual assault rape case, which does make it super complicated. I feel like that just kind of always gets glossed over when talking about D-Rose's revitalization on the court, which has been amazing. I thought he could still be like a solid six man. I did not think he would ever be this efficient again. He's playing a little bit better on the defensive end, and just like I said, all that acrobatic stuff, like, he's finally been mostly healthy and he's been able to do it. But you said, like, my feelings are definitely conflicted. I don't like go out of my way to like really praise him. It's just really hard because I was right there with you.
I will never tweet about Derrick Rose. That's just over, man. It's just like, it's just not worth it. You know what I mean? It just doesn't matter.
He has such a strong and rabid fan base still that just like, that because of whatever he got, he did not get convicted. He was totally acquitted. That just like throw it by the wayside. But it's just really hard to do that. It is just so complicated. It's like you mentioned, like he was meant so much to just to us as fans growing up back in the 2010-2011 season when that was good. And to give a shout out to Darnell Mayberry at The Athletic, he did a 10,000 word oral history of that 2010-2011 season, which just like brought the city to life. The fans loved that team. These guys are still really close, and obviously Rose was the youngest league MVP. Like, it was incredible to read that, and just, like, it makes you really nostalgic for those days. But then when you think about the other stuff and all the off-the-court stuff with Rose, it just makes it such a complicated thing, and he's got such a strong fan base, so we're like, anything you say about him, you're going to be taking heat from everywhere. Like, it's obviously, like, maybe we should be stronger in our convictions and really speak out more, but it's, like I said, just complicated is the best way to put it. And it was really interesting to watch that whole scene at the United Center, and especially with the MVP chants in the fourth quarter. I thought it was kind of amusing when that was happening. Like, Rose had a really tough finish going to the line, MVP chants, he's smiling the entire time. Neil and Stacey weren't even acknowledging it at all. They were laughing about Frank Thomas or some shit like that. And like, I don't know if that was on purpose. They just like were told like not to really like bring like really go like all in on some like Rose rehab story, but it was kind of surreal as he's getting these MVP chants. The Bulls announcers are like talking about Frank Thomas and like some like thing that wasn't even like relative to the game during a huge blowout.
You know, it was good to see Taj in that game too. How about Taj hitting a three? How many threes did Taj hit for the Bulls? I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm going to pull them up because I do not remember very many Taj Gibson three-pointers. For his career, it seems like Taj has hit, let's see, he hit three career three-pointers on the Bulls.
Yeah, you mentioned that. It's funny because I feel like every year with the Bulls, he talked about adding a three-pointer and then it never happened. But now he's been taking a few more with the Timberwolves, and I feel like that just kind of And that three, he hit that three, I believe, right at the end of the fourth quarter. I stopped watching, like, after the Rose MVP chance. I think that was basically like the cherry on top of the game, just to completely finish off the beatdown. And it was just kind of nice for him to do that. Yeah, but he's, I mean, Taj, we all love Taj. Taj had a great story, mentioned a story about before the game that he, like, that some, like, random truck driver here, like, mentioned, like, saw him, recognized him, honked his horn, and they, like, they just had, like, a random conversation, just like Taj Gibson and some Chicago truck driver. And, like, Bulls fans love Taj Gibson. He loved Chicago. He was such an important part of their identity for so many years. So it was great to see him again. And you mentioned other guys like Luol Deng was a huge part of the identity. I know he doesn't play as much anymore. He's kind of over the hill, but it's nice to see him back as well. And just like all those guys, just like I said, it just brings back some of that nostalgia for that 2010-2011 team. Like I said, if you have not read that on The Athletic, Darnell Mabry's long oral history of that team, like you had comments, you had quotes from like Ronnie Brewer, like Brian Scalabrine. They were talking about Keith Bogans, and apparently Kurt Thomas used to always shit on Keith Bogans. And there were just a lot of like really just a lot of fun anecdotes in there. Just a really fun read before just another terrible Bulls loss.
Dude, that story was so unbelievably good. I could have block quoted the entire story basically on Twitter. I'm going to read off a few sections for those of you who don't have The Athletic, who haven't checked out that story. And seriously, you should check it out. The Athletic is a site worth subscribing to. And, you know, Darnell also had a great story on Bobby Portis giving his mom a home on Mother's Day. I don't know if you saw that. Darnell's killing it on the Bulls beat recently. He's also a really good guy. So shout out to Darnell. You could actually listen to Darnell talk about that oral history of the 2011 Bulls on the Bulls HQ podcast with our boy Mark in Australia. That episode dropped yesterday, so be sure to check out the Bulls HQ podcast. Mark does a great job with that. I always give Mark a shout out because he's grinding, he's killing it on the Bulls beat, and we need the coverage for this team, and we need people holding them accountable. But back to Darnell's story, here's just a few choice quotes. This one's from Brian Scalabrine. "What I remember most about Keith Bogans is Kurt Thomas always making fun of him." Scalabrine again. "I saw him in Dallas this season while calling games. He comes up to me and out of nowhere, he didn't even say hello. He roasts Keith Bogans. Quote, I saw Keith the other day. He's in better shape now than he was when he was starting two guard for 82 games. And then he just kept walking, like kept it moving." So that was great. And then we have another Kurt Thomas comment from Taj Gibson. Taj says, "Kurt Thomas was solid. I love playing with Kurt. I learned so much from him. Everyone learned so much from him. He was the type of veteran who could go out, literally go to the club, come in the very next day, be the oldest guy in the gym, and give you the most effort and still do his job. Some games his jumper was on, and right when we needed him." Kurt Thomas just sounds hilarious. I would love to go to the club with Kurt Thomas. I would not want to catch a forearm shiver from Kurt Thomas, as LeBron once did. Who could forget that when they were playing the Heat? Kurt Thomas just shacked LeBron at half court during LeBron's Heat heyday. So that was really great. And then there's one more long Scalabrine quote that I'm going to read just because I thought it was funny. I was not a big Scalabrine guy. During those days, I thought that it was kind of ridiculous that the fans liked him just because he was white. With that being said, Scalabrine has given some great quotes on that Bulls team over the years. So if you sort of like, you know, peel back the reason for why Scalabrine was so popular in the first place, he is a pretty likable character. This is a long passage from Scalabrine talking about the 2011 Bulls. I'm going to read it in full. Scalabrine says, quote, "You know what's unique about that team? There's an element of all the personalities. Think about it. You have Derrick Rose. To me, if you are a kid from the inner city and you hoop, if you are a little white kid growing up in the suburbs, you want to grow up and be like Derrick Rose. Just think of that population. Then you have Joakim Noah, how different he was when you look at his personality. It's like this, quote, I don't care. I'm going to wear these clothes. I've got my wild hair. I'm just out here. And it's almost probably along the same lines as the Dennis Rodman population back in the 90s, where it's just all the wild people in the world just love Joakim Noah. Another one, I think, would be Kyle Korver and his little mix. He kind of looks like Justin Bieber, and all the teenage girls think he's cool with his hair and all this stuff. And then you have me, for all the middle-aged white men living in the basement of their mom's house trying to make it in life. You had Luol Deng with his connection to Africa. I mean, you go on and on. There are so many different demographics on one team. And then you add in the coach. Everyone who loves Bill Belichick and the hard-nosed coach from back in the day could associate with Tibbs. I really felt like we were America's team for that season." Well, goddamn, Scalabrine. That just nailed it, I guess.
Yeah, it was just, and just, there were so many other, like I said, we could go all day about like reading quotes from this. We won't do that. But like I said, go read that. There was, yeah, just a lot of, how that team was just like so close together, how they would all go out together, whether they were at home or on the road. Taj Gibson had some quote about like them pulling all nighters all the time, like just like some going out to the clubs together and doing all that stuff. And at the end, I think, I can't remember who it was, had the quote about just like how they still like talk to each other, how they're still, some of these guys still hang out with each other and are still like really close. You just tell just like how close all those guys were. I mean, you can tell it on the floor as well. They played defense as a group together. Well, obviously Rose was the main guy in offense, and just like, it was just such a fun team to root for. And it's like, that's what we're trying to get back to. Like, we want a team that we can root like so easy for like that again. And right now it's not nearly as easy to do that with a team that's really struggling to find any type of cohesion on the court or any type of chemistry. And I guess I'll use that to go into about this young team, chemistry and all that stuff. The Bulls did get Zach LaVine back from injury, 5-game absence with an ankle injury. So finally getting back, he did come off the bench, but giving more time for the Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen. You can also toss in Wendell Carter Jr., but especially those main three guys from the Butler trade. There's been a lot made about how those guys have really struggled together and the limited minutes they've had. They only played 255 minutes together last year, and they were bad. They've only played a handful of minutes this year, and they've also been bad. Like, moving forward, now with LaVine back, with the main guys of the young core back, the Bulls really need to get this chemistry thing down with these guys. They need to figure out how to play offense together because it has been really, really bad. I think they played like 10, 11 minutes against the Timberwolves together. They had an offensive rating of like 71 or 72. That's what the offensive rating with these guys is all season with those three together, and like, that just shouldn't be happening. I mean, you know it's going to be tough with some of these guys with the way they play. We've talked about this before in terms of Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine having some issues in terms of both being ball dominant, Chris Dunn not being an off-the-ball threat, and then Lowry just kind of sometimes getting lost in the shuffle with those two guys dominating the ball. Starting tonight with the Wizards, I believe this is going to be their first game they start together all season. We're going to need to see them really come together and try to find some of that chemistry over the course of the rest of the season, because if they can't do that, this rebuild is going to be going nowhere.
Yeah, and you know, I do think that Markkanen's play recently has definitely been a bright spot. He had the back-to-back 30-point games, dropping 32 on Orlando in a win and then 31 on Cleveland. He was really good in both of those games, especially against the Cavs. Against the Magic, he went 12 of 20, finished with 32 points, also had 6 boards, hit 4 of 6 from 3, and then against the Cavs, 11 of 18, 31 points, 5 of 10 from 3. We actually have a little bit of a sample size for Markkanen now. He's played in every game in December, and here are his numbers. He's averaging 30 minutes a game, 17.4 points per game, only shooting 43% from the field, but he's taking 6.8 attempts per game from 3, hitting 39%. He's also making 85% of his free throws, but he's not really getting to the line. He's only getting 2.3 attempts per game from the foul line. So to me, Markkanen, he's got flamethrower scoring ability. There's no doubt about it. I love the fact that he continues to increase his volume from three-point range. Lauri Markkanen should be taking 7 threes a game at minimum. So it's good to see.
I think he should be taking more. Like, there's like no, like right now, like you said, minimum, he should be at like 7. He should be backing up, because like you mentioned, he's not, his overall his overall field goal percentage isn't that great. He's still a bit rusty in terms of like off the dribble stuff. And like, I'd rather him just jacking, like running, whatever, getting open three pointers, jacking threes in transition than whatever, taking a bunch of like tough shots off the dribble. Obviously that's a part of his game that we'll have to develop and we'll need to see it. And he'll need to get to the line more, like you mentioned, but like, really, with his shooting ability, he should be taking 7, 8, 9 threes a game, I feel like, and that should be just like easy.
Yeah, he took 13 in the game against the Pacers at the beginning of the month. So yeah, Markkanen's ceiling. There's been some discussion on Bulls Twitter recently about Markkanen's ceiling. We should really have our boy Kevin Farragut, NBA Couchside on Twitter, come on the podcast and talk about this. He has sort of been lower on Markkanen than a lot of Bulls fans, basically pointing to the fact that Markkanen doesn't offer much playmaking as someone who's going to have the ball in his hands quite a bit. He doesn't get to the line much. And you remember the stat from last year that Markkanen had like the lowest block rate of any 7-footer in NBA history, I think it was. So, you know, he's still someone who isn't going to make a huge impact on the defensive side of the ball. He has had some good rebounding games, and on the defensive end of rebounding especially, was he was better than the scouting report entering college. In college, he was not a good rebounder. He rebounded well as a rookie. A lot of that was because Robin Lopez was clearing guys out, being a selfless teammate, allowing Markkanen to come in, swoop up the board. So that's going to be something to look at as Markkanen continues to get older. It's like, what is his role? Is he really just a floor spacer? Is he someone who is like a super version of a role player? Or is this a guy who can be a top 30 NBA player? There's some Bulls fans who think he can be a top 10 NBA player. Obviously, when you have a 7-footer with that type of pure stroke, that's going to be just so valuable regardless of if he ends up being like a legitimate all-star candidate, a superstar candidate maybe, or someone who's just sort of elevating the talents of everyone else around him. But Markkanen's had some good games. And, you know, if you watch the highlights versus Orlando versus Cleveland, I mean, the dude was nasty. He was on fire in those games. So that was really fun to see. Now it really comes back to the fact, like, how can LaVine and Markkanen play off each other? How can Carver and Markkanen play off each other? How can LaVine and Dunn play off each other? These are the questions with the Bulls moving forward. And I think, you know, Markkanen's going to be here. Carter's going to be here. So your front court is taken care of. LaVine under contract, obviously there's a lot of, like, LaVine's just a polarizing player. You know, like, everyone knows that who's listening to this podcast. But I would say that, you know, LaVine's going to be around and that Dunn is the guy who might not be around. Like, maybe you get more of a 3-and-D point guard in that role. Maybe the Bulls draft Ja Morant if they have, you know, the 4th or 5th or 6th pick in the draft. He's a point guard from Murray State this year who's a dynamic athlete, great passer, can't really shoot. So I wonder about the fit struggles there too. But, you know, Markkanen's the guy. And I think that, you know, that's what I've been interested in since he's come back, is how the Bulls are using him under Jim Boylan, how he's playing off the rest of his teammates. And of course, this offense has just been straight fucking dog shit since Boylan took over.
Yeah, I mean, it was bad before as well. Obviously, there were all the injuries with Markkanen out. It was bad for. You do mention the thing about how LaVine is polarizing. I feel like I've kind of mentioned that, like, or I've kind of noticed that, especially like my mentions. And was like Dunn and Markkanen have had some time to get a little chemistry, and we saw a few some nice things when they against the Cavs, and like Dunn has played relatively well. He still have some real skepticism about him because he doesn't shoot threes. He doesn't, like, I think he's taken, like, I tweeted this the other day, he's taken like 9 threes since he's come back in like 8 games. Like, he's basically taking like a 3 a game, which is way too low. Doesn't get to the line, but those two have built some chemistry together. It's just that when it's all three of them together, they kind of struggled. I mean, some have considered LaVine came off the bench against the Wolves and played really well individually, had a really nice individual game. Some people think LaVine, his best role maybe is as like a supercharged 6-man scoring guy, and maybe he shouldn't be like the go-to all-star type number one option. But yeah, I feel like I've noticed a lot of people just have kind of mentioned that, like, oh, look, LaVine comes back. He's only looking out to get his. He ruins the offense. I really can't go there yet. He's obviously such a talented player. And like you mentioned, the Bulls' offense is just like so bad in general. I think they still need like a scoring. It's just a matter of giving this young core time to find that chemistry. And like they need that time. Like, I know Bulls fans can be impatient, but like they really have had so little time together on the court where it's not that big of a surprise that they've struggled a bit. I feel like the degree of their struggles has been probably a little surprising, just how bad they've been. I think looking back on like the numbers that they've had together, I mentioned in like 30, like whatever the minutes they've had this year, it's like a 70 offensive rating. Last year it was like a 96 offensive rating. So like that's really bad stuff. But again, like the Bulls in general have been a terrible offense. And you mentioned like under Boylan, how it has just been kind of a chore to watch them play. Again, LaVine missed some of these games, but even in like some of the games they won, the Magic game was absolutely brutal. Like that Spurs comeback, the offense was just okay, and that was mostly like a defensive thing and the Spurs falling apart. Like, I mean, they did kill the Cavs. They were super efficient in that game. I think they had something like a 120 offensive rating in that game. But the Cavs are also a historically bad defensive team. The Cavs have like a 115 D rating. So like if you don't kill the Cavs, that's really bad. So just bringing up the numbers under Boylan, just kind of the general style of play. While the Bulls were not good either under Hoiberg, I just feel like it's been even getting worse. And just like the whole aesthetic has been getting worse. Like Boylan has been preaching just like a slow it down, like just really like I think we mentioned this before about how guys will even like look at Boylan and be like and like hesitate instead of pushing the pace, like they'll slow it down instead. So I wrote a thing for Forbes this morning, just looking at some of the numbers. The Bulls are dead last in offensive rating under Boylan. They're dead last in 3-point attempts. They're dead last in free throw attempts. They're towards the bottom of the league in second chance points, fast break points, they're towards the bottom of the league in pace. I think they're like, they're 26th in the league in pace since Boylan took over. So like all these numbers, and they're not getting many shots at the rim. They're taking a decent amount of shots from mid-range, even though they're not that good at them. They're taking a lot of shots at the end of the shot clock. They have been converting an okay rate on those tough shots in the shot clock, at least relative to other teams. But it's still like, when you're taking, you don't want to be taking a bunch of long two-pointers or whatever at the end of the shot clock. That's just not a good way to run offense. So like, I feel like that's just not the way I know. And again, shouting out Darnell Mayberry, he mentioned this after the Wolves game, like while like instilling this new, whatever, defensive identity, grit, road dog thing is like great and all. And like that should be a thing for like a young team to help them like learn defensive principles, how to play hard every night. It really isn't that worth it if you're running an antiquated offensive system that isn't taking advantage of like the talented offensive players you have. Like, I feel like this team with LaVine back, with Dunn there, like those are guys who should be able to push pace, excel in transition. Lowry should be getting open transition threes, like take advantage of that skill set. Wendell's a young guy, get out and run. Like, I mean, well, the Bulls are like the most athletic team in the league, but they're a young team with some guys who can make hay in transition. Like, they need to take advantage of that instead of just the constant slow bringing the ball up the court, getting it over half court with 16, 17 seconds and taking all these shots at the end of the shot clock. Like, they need to let these guys loose a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. I've been super hard on Boylan. I think Boylan sucks. I want no part of anything that has to do with Jim Boylan coaching the Bulls. But he has been the coach for 10 games now, and they are 4-6 over that stretch.
11 games.
Okay, four and seven. All right, then I screwed that up. But then maybe all my stats are slightly off. But anyways, their defense has been really good since Boylan took over. I had him at number 11 in efficiency.
It's around there. They have been legitimately better. I'm still not sure like how legit that improvement is. Like, the couple games against the Magic really helped. Like, the Cavs game really helped. Like, this.
They also had the Celtics game though during that stretch, which won the other one, you know.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, it kind of evens out, I guess. But like, in some of these games against the actual like good competition, like they got absolutely throttled by the Wolves. The Thunder beat their ass once. They did beat the Thunder in another game. That was when the offense actually did have a nice game that game. And the Thunder were at, like, I think the end of a road trip. What was the other game? The Celtics obviously beat their ass. And then like the Spurs game, they were getting their ass beat, and then the Spurs fell apart. You could definitely give the Bulls some credit there for keeping the foot on the gas pedal and playing hard defense. And the Spurs have been playing really well in general lately. I'm still just not sure. Like, they obviously have improved defensively somewhat. They're playing a bit harder. I think it also helped that LaVine was out and that Jabari Parker has been completely ripped out of the rotation. Like, and Cameron Payne hasn't been playing as much. So like, they're playing more Shaq Harrison, more Archie Diakono, guys that are actually more defensive players, I feel like has also helped. So like, I'm not sure like how much better they actually are overall defensively. Maybe slightly better, but like if a marginal improvement on defense comes with like no development and just a bad antiquated offense, it's not that exciting yet, or not something to get that excited about.
Yeah, I think Fred Hoiberg would have loved to coach a defense that didn't have Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine in it. So, you know, you can immediately draw that connection. Also, Shaq Harrison is just a beast on defense, dude. Like, I don't know. Would you say he's a bigger keeper than Archie Diakono? I guess it doesn't really matter ultimately because they're just fringe NBA players. But he has some legitimate skill on defense. I mean, he's a monster on defense, straight up. I wanted to ask you this. Maybe I'm going a little off topic here. LaVine versus Dunn. If you could only keep one, knowing you have to pay Dunn, you don't know what that contract is going to be yet. Which one are you keeping?
I feel like I had this conversation before. Jesus. I don't know. It's so tough because like, Dunn, I feel like, is at worst, he's a solid two-way player. I guess I would possibly lean towards him just because of the two-way aspect. Like, we talk about how the Bulls like don't have enough two-way players. And like, as good of a scorer as LaVine is, and just like the potential that he has, like, I feel like LaVine still has more overall potential. But like, right now, based on what I've seen, I might lean towards Dunn. What pulls me away from Dunn is just the complete lack of interest in shooting three-pointers and getting to the line. Like, while he's been shooting great from mid-range, and like he's been converting pretty well. Like, if his offense is going to be based on him hitting a bunch of floaters and like mid-range shots, and like that's basically what his efficiency is going to be based on, I feel like I mentioned this before, like, that's just not that great. Like, I feel like that tops out as like a good bench guard and like maybe a lower end starting point guard, while like LaVine is probably, with this scoring alone, is maybe a borderline all-star player. But like, if he doesn't impact the game positively in other ways, like it's almost just like really, it's still like really hard to say, just because we haven't seen these guys have still such major flaws where it's tough for me to say. Do you have a strong opinion either way on this? I'm like taking a coward's way out here, but like kind of being wishy-washy on this, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, the advanced stats favor Dunn. If you look, Dunn has more win shares per 48, which win shares are cumulative, so that's all you could really judge it on right now because Dunn's missed most of the season. And obviously, defensively, Dunn is really good. I would still take LaVine over Dunn because the thing is that Chris Dunn, I don't – like, you called him a two-way player. I don't know if he's a two-way player because his offense kind of sucks.
Yeah, I guess that's still theoretical at this point. I guess he has more potential to be a two-way player than LaVine at this point. Like, and if you think LaVine's defense is a lost cause, I guess like will his offense ever make up for it? Maybe. You mentioned though, like Dunn is still kind of an average offensive player at best. Like you look at his PER is like still around average because his true shooting percentage I think is slightly below average. Even like he's shooting like a really solid percentage overall in terms of field goal percentage, but because he doesn't shoot threes and doesn't shoot them well, because he doesn't shoot free throws and doesn't shoot those that great either, like the overall efficiency just is not there. And like I guess for a starting point guard in this league, a guy who just doesn't shoot that many threes at all and doesn't do much besides like shoot mid-range J's and like it's only like a decent distributor playmaker. Like he's shown some nice things. He's had some nice lobs to Wendell Carter Jr. in that Timberwolves game. He does some nice things there in terms of playmaking, but I wouldn't call him like an elite playmaker or anything like that. Like I feel like the lack of shooting just, it definitely brings him down a lot.
Yeah. So I'm taking LaVine on this for the reason that I think that LaVine could play a more critical role on a good team. So even though the advanced stats do favor Dunn a little bit, it's like Dunn really can't play off the ball at all because he's just miserable at shooting. So if he's going to play on the ball, like he's not good enough to be the guy on the ball for an elite team. Like if you look at the offensive initiators in this league, he's in like the James Harden role where he's not 10% as good as James Harden. So yeah, defensively, he's really good and that's great. But in terms of like what role he plays on a winning team, it's like the dude has to be on the ball and he's not good enough on the ball to do that for a great team. Meanwhile, LaVine also prefers to play on the ball, but his shooting ability gives him way more potential off the ball. It's also easier to hide, a bad defender, I think, than especially a shooting guard than it is for people with some other weaknesses in their game. So I would take LaVine. It's like you look at teams like the Sixers, you look at teams like the Rockets, like all those teams would probably take Zach LaVine. I don't know what his contract, like, yeah, he is overpaid for sure. But I still think that like an athletic two guard who can rip threes off the catch and shoot, can create off the dribble for himself, if you could just get him to play within a team concept, the talent's there. And you know, this is why I liked LaVine, even going back to his days at UCLA when he was coming off the bench behind Steve Alford's fucking son, which was just shameful back then. It's like you could see the talent with LaVine. I mean, that shouldn't shock anyone that he is capable of, like, you know, passing the eye test with flying colors. The stats haven't backed it up. Still only 23 years old. But I would take LaVine over Dunn. I'm going to say Chris Dunn is not the long-term point guard for the Chicago Bulls. I think they either let him go or he gets moved. And I think that, we've already heard rumors that the front office isn't in love with Dunn's fit. It'll be really interesting to see what happens with him in restricted free agency. Is he getting a deal comparable to Marcus Smart? Is he getting more than that? Is he getting less than that? Marcus Smart's contract, was that for $50 million? I'm Googling it right now. Marcus Smart signed a four-year $52 million deal. So, yeah, and like no one's putting fucking Marcus Smart on the ball to initiate your offense. You know what I mean? So it's like Dunn, ultimately, his ceiling isn't going to be high enough unless he suddenly can extend his mid-range shooting to three-point range, which we just haven't seen any evidence of that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like just you mentioned like that LaVine can kind of be the more offensive versatility just as an on-ball thing. And I feel like that's probably going to be something that the Bulls will need to figure out. And if Dunn does end up being, I guess, actually does end up being like a long-term option. Like, I feel like LaVine will definitely, will he be willing to shift into that off-ball role to let Dunn be more of the on-ball initiator? I am curious to see how that works out. And that's something that, like I mentioned, they're going to have to figure that out starting tonight. And hopefully, knock on wood, that all these guys can actually stay healthy so we can actually see that. Because, like, if we don't see that and if there's more injuries and stuff like that, it's just going to be really hard to figure out where they're going to go moving forward.
Yep.
I guess so. Now we could take a quick look ahead before we wrap up here. I mentioned that they are playing the Wizards tonight, first start of the year for all their core guys together because of all these injuries. A game on the road. The Wizards have been, you talk about the Bulls being a dumpster fire. The Wizards are possibly on their level, if not even worse. Obviously, the expectations for the Wizards were much, much higher going into the year, and they've had just a ton of problems. They're terrible defensively. John Wall is, a lot of people now think he's one of the worst contracts in the league. Still, obviously, really talented player, but they're sitting down at 13-22. They are 9-6 at home, though, so they have played much better at home. This is a game the Wizards should probably win, but I feel like with them this year, you really just have had no idea what they're getting. So, I mean, this is a game where the Bulls should theoretically possibly be competitive, unless the Wizards actually come out and play well at home, and the Bulls continue to struggle with that chemistry. But I think this is gonna be an interesting game. Like, I'm not like super excited to watch it or anything, just because it's two just garbage teams. But I think it'll be interesting to see how, especially with these Bulls young guys coming together against a Wizards team, where I feel like if the Wizards like lose to this awful Bulls team at home, like, I wonder if that's like will be the end of Scott Brooks. That would drop them to 13-23, like three losses in a row. They're already 2-8 in their last 10 games. Like, I feel like I'm almost surprised Scottie Brooks is still there to begin with. But like, and they've kind of been teetering. They just traded for Trevor Ariza. There were rumors before that they might look to trade Wall or Beal, but I mean, it was still pretty early in the season. But I feel like they're like teetering on the edge of maybe possibly fully blowing that thing up.
I totally agree. The Wizards are one of the few teams in the NBA who you could argue might be a bigger joke than the Bulls. I mean, the Bulls are just in a lot better position than the Wizards. There's no doubt about that. Like, Wall's contract hasn't even started yet, right? And he's going to be making north of $40 million a year. The Bulls, you know, it's been tough, but there are some good young pieces in place here. Hopefully they can add another one in the draft. And if they do add another one in the draft, you know, you're going to start to see some fruits of this thing eventually, I think, as early as next season, at least a little bit. And if they get Zion, suddenly the Bulls are looking really good, because we know that what the value of a superstar is in the NBA. So,
for sure. And then after the Wizards, so the last game of the new year, or of the 2018 before the new year comes, is at Toronto. So that's a great way to finish things off. That will have to assume that's, unless guys sit for the Raptors, like, that will probably be a complete beatdown. The Raptors have been one of the best teams of the season. I think they're best team in the league. They're 26-10. They have just so many good players. Kawhi has been an MVP candidate. They just have so many solid two-way players. They just do so many things well. They know their roles. Nick Nurse has been a great coach. I feel like we've lauded Nick Nurse, tossed bouquets at him on this podcast before. Like, he's been really great. So like, so that'll be a real tough one to end the year of 2018, which I think just wants me to, or I want to bring up the point where I've mentioned this on Twitter before, is that once that game happens, it is looking very likely that the Chicago Bulls will end the year 2018 with fewer wins than the Chicago Bears, which is absolutely hilarious. It's great for the Bears, having an amazing season, going to be in the playoffs, going to host a home playoff game. But the fact that the Bulls, they can, the most games they could win in the, for this season is be at 11 wins. The Bears already have 11 wins, so they cannot get past them. I figure the Bulls will lose one of these next two. So Bears, more wins in the 2018 season than the Bulls had once the calendar turned to 2019, which is pretty fucking amazing.
Are we doing a Bears episode of this podcast? I feel like we should do that. Or like, would no one give a shit, because the Bulls are such an international fan base. Me and you are lifelong Chicagoans, so of course we are you know, huge Bears fans as well. My family vacations when I was a kid used to be to Platteville, Wisconsin, to watch Bears training camp in the 90s when the Bears were just garbage. So I'm super jacked about the Bears. I feel like we should do a Bears episode. Tweet at us if that's a bad idea, or if it's a good idea. Let us know.
Yeah, it would be a lot of fun. Maybe we'll see. Like, maybe for a playoff game, we'll do like half and half, Bulls, Bears. Could be a lot of fun.
Could be cool.
Yeah. I think that's all for me. Like I said, Bulls, Wizards coming up tonight, 6 o'clock Chicago time. We'll see how that game goes. Could be interesting. But yeah, that's all for us today. Like I said, you can check us out. We're at a new home at Blue Wire Pods. You can still find us at all the same places on iTunes and Stitcher and Spotify, Google Play, and all that fun stuff. But really excited for this opportunity. Shout out again to Kevin Jones for believing in us and giving us this chance to join Blue Wire and join all these other fun pods, NBA pods, and all these other pods out there. So it'll be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Shout out to Blue Wire. Here we are. We're doing this thing.
All right. Here we go. We're doing it. We're doing it big.
All right. Well, for Jason, I'm Ricky. This has been Cash Considerations. Thanks for listening.
Take it easy, guys.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.